Light the candle, tiger!
Hello there, a warm Wednesday welcome to the Racing Post Golf Postcast. It's Bruce Millington, Steve Palmer and Star Sports golf guru Glenn Day looking ahead to the Canada Open and some very weird thing going on in Spain, the format of which I just cannot understand. No, it's in Portugal, it's the Golf Sixes. Anyway, hopefully we'll get some winners out of that, but I don't even know how it works. Steve will tell us. Before we look ahead though, let's review last week. Patrick Cantlay won the Memorial as tipped by Glenn. Well done, Glenn. A brilliant suss that. And then we had the Belgian knockout and we got the final the sponsors wanted, didn't we, Steve? Two blokes nobody's ever heard of.
Well, it's a tad harsh on Guido Migliozzi. I mean, he won the Kenya Open.
Yeah, of course.
Remember, he won the Kenya Open on a tight tree-lined track. I mean, there was grounds for backing Migliozzi. Obviously, Darius Vandril, much, much harder to find. But yeah, I was kicking myself a little bit that I didn't have Guido, because he's played well since that Kenya win. He's got some good form in head-to-head duels. He's got there were grounds for having Migliozzi at a big price. And
it was 90s in places, I believe.
Absolutely, yeah. And I only had three selections. I could have easily slipped him in as well. So, yeah, I spent last week kicking myself quite considerably.
I reckon you actually probably, when most people say they were kicking themselves, they mean it metaphorically. But I bet you have actually kicked yourself, haven't you?
Yes. So I have reverted to some self-harm.
No, it's not self-harm.
No, don't worry. I haven't got any weaponry out, but I do get very angry when I miss opportunities. I mean, the Patrick Cantlay. I mean, I was delighted for Glenn. You know, nice to see Star Sports get off the mark. But I was absolutely gutted about missing Cantlay. I mean, he was the last name off my shortlist, and when there's no more painful moment in golf when the last name off your shortlist wins the tournament. Yeah, you spend all day on the Monday. Whittling down the field, 144 players for the Memorial. I got it down to six relatively quickly, and I spent 2 hours going from six to five. It was so hard to do that, but I had too many short prizes in there. I had to get rid of one, and Cantlay was being backed off the boards. We talked about it last week. The gamble on Cantlay was absolutely instant on the Monday. All Monday he was getting punted. All the 22-1 was hoovered up straight away. He was 16-1 and shortening by Monday evening. So on value grounds, I had to let Cantlay go. But Sunday night, absolutely brutal. Hideki Matsuyama was our man, playing alongside Cantlay, and was completely outplayed by him. Matsuyama finished sixth on his own, and Cantlay just absolutely relentless, wasn't he? Once he got in front, really impressive. I think Jack Nicklaus gave him a good little pep talk at the halfway stage of the tournament. Apparently, got a good relationship with Jack Nicklaus, the tournament host, and that seemed to do the trick.
Is Cantlay now in that elite group of players who's kind of going to be under sub 25-1 where every tees it up now, Steve?
Yeah, I think you're right, Bruce. I mean, he's just an elite ball striker. He won last week with a 19 under par total. He didn't hole a putt outside 20 feet. You know, there was nothing fluky about what he did last week. It was just churning out greens in regulation and holing from short distance. So, I think he's a big runner for everything from now on.
Okay, and Glenn, you're presumably a massive Cantlay fan after that now, aren't you?
Yeah, he's certainly gone up in my estimations. Just the performance on Sunday was near faultless. The one shot he hit slightly offline, landing on someone's chair, he got the benefit of that. But, I mean, just everything about his game was absolutely spot on. He looked so focused. That's what I really liked about it. He never really smiled until he held the putt on the 18th green. He was focused, determined to beat an elite field and, you know, finally stamp his name on the name of golf. And yeah, he can only improve from here.
And was that a big gamble that Steve touched upon earlier, Glenn?
It was. I mean, we didn't see loads of money. Obviously, slightly ducked him a bit. Obviously, I had a fancy for him. But a bit of 22s about early 16s. He settled down at 16, then went in shorter. But it didn't hurt us particularly, no.
So, I don't suppose Guido Migliozzi did either.
Very quiet in the Belgian knockout, in all honesty. But yeah, the final four, because each way the first four last week, if you name any of those four, with the possible exception of the guy who ended up winning, then you're hats off to you, sort of thing.
Yeah, another very, very poor event on the European Tour. Just tell me this quickly, Glenn. If the amount you turned over on the Memorial could be expressed as 100, what would turnover on that European event have been?
About 10.
Literally?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Poor. I mean, events like that, they just don't get don't capture the public's imagination in any way. Obviously, all the superstars are playing on the other side of the pond.
And what about those nine-hole stroke play matches? Do people engage with them, or are they just passing by?
No, really, just pass by. And obviously, when there's more than one round in a day, you know, it's a quick turnover and play. I mean, you barely get the prices up. And so, yeah, not a lot of interest in those, really.
A load of old bollocks, basically. OK, which give us a player that you took out of last week each. We'll start with you, Steve.
I like Guido. I think he's just an absolute dude. You know, he didn't look scared at all. His second European Tour win, won a load of Italian amateur titles as a youngster. So, yeah, I like Guido Migliosi going forward. And, sorry, I'm sounding very predictable here, but Patrick Cantlay is obviously, now he's got that second win, you know, because that was the big stumbling block last week. He'd only won one low-grade US Tour title. Now he's got that second win. The old floodgates could open.
OK, Steve scoured the lower down the leaderboards to bring his players to follow. Glenn, who are your players that we should keep an eye on?
Well, I put that in Migliozzi. Some of the shots he played off the tee, he just hits it a mile as well. He can only get better. But I was impressed with Wiesberger again last week. Very close to losing it all in the first round. Hit a ball out of bounds late on. Managed to birdie second ball. From then on, he just went on a birdie fest until he came unstuck when he was in the quarters. But obviously, his game's coming back. Won the previous week in Denmark. In these weaker events, if he stays on the European Tour, you can see him winning again in the next 2 or 3 weeks, probably.
OK, that was last week. Let's look ahead now, and we'll start with the US event. It's taking place in Canada. It's the RBC Canadian Open at Hamilton Golf and Country Club. It used to be at Glen Abbey, but I was reading today, Steve, they seem to have turned that into housing. So we're down to Hamilton Golf and Country Club. And before Steve gives us his main tip, Glenn, take us through the betting from Star Sports, if you would.
Yeah, certainly. We're betting 50 odds of first six places as well this week. 11-2, Dustin Johnson. 13-2, Brooks Koepka. 10-1, Rory McIlroy. 16s, Justin Thomas. 20-1, Matt Kuchar and Webb Simpson. 28, Scott Piercy. 30, Sergio Garcia, and 33, Bubba Watson and Henrik Stenson.
Steve, another excellent field, isn't it?
Very much so, John. Yeah, I mean, it's a great shame what's happening to Glen Abbey. I mean, they are talking about getting the bulldozers into that course and turn it into real estate, and there's a big campaign going on to save it.
But I mean, Canada's absolutely enormous. It's one of the least populated countries in the world. Why the dickens do they feel the need to bulldoze a lovely old golf course like that, eh?
Well, my thoughts exactly. But yeah, Hamilton Country Club's taken over. It's hosted in 2003, 2006 and 2012. So a long time ago. It's a Harry Colt design. You know, it's Harry Colt is an Englishman, created a lot of the best courses on this side of the pond. This one is a short classic parkland layout, very healthy roughs, very small greens, just one par five on each nine, 6,967 yards, par 70. So
that's nothing, isn't it, in this day and age?
Oh, absolutely. So I'm looking for accurate players who scramble well around these tiny greens. And there's a bit of breeze forecast at the weekend. So, I think you're still going to need double digits under par to win. It's not that hard. Good honest classic test. And
you're ignoring the flashy names at the top of the market, aren't you, I believe?
Yeah, I sure am. I think they've all got eyes on next week. I think Dustin Johnson is probably the pick of those quartet, but I prefer Shane Lowry at 40-1. I think Shane is in a really positive frame of mind at the moment. He's just moved back to Ireland from Florida and get a decent pint of Guinness inside him at last. He seems much happier, and he's looking to make a push for Padraig Harrington's 2020 Ryder Cup team. He's never played in the Ryder Cup. He's desperate to play in the Ryder Cup. He said he may stick to the European Tour next season, regardless of whether he regains his US Tour card, which is... shows how motivated he is to make that side. And I think it takes all the US Tour pressure off him. He used to put a lot of pressure on himself playing in the States. He moved his family over there. He was chasing the FedEx Cup dollar. But now that pressure's gone, he can play in US Tour events like this one, knowing they're not the be-all and end-all. He can play with freedom this week. And I think the course is absolutely ideal for him. He's got off to a good start this year. He won the Abu Dhabi Championship, his first event of the year. Had a quiet spell since, but his last two tournaments, he's been really impressive. He finished third in the Heritage, and then he finished eighth at Bethpage Black last time out in the USPGA. And at Bethpage Black, over the final three rounds of the USPGA, he beat Brooks Koepka by three shots. Only Dustin Johnson, the only player in the field who outscored Lowry over the final three rounds. Lowry opened with a 75. It was his course debut, understandably slow start on a course a lot of other players knew well. But those last three rounds, it was spectacular golf from Lowry. And I think he comes to a course that suits him better this week. Hamilton. Yeah, as I say, designed by Harry Colt, which is the fellow who designed Wentworth. Lowry's Wentworth record. There's similarities between these two courses. Lowry's Wentworth record is amazing. Fourth in 2011, 12th in 2013, second in 2014, sixth in 2015, sixth in 2017, 15th last year. He adores Wentworth. I think he'll fall in love instantly with Hamilton. He's done well at Firestone, similarities there. Biggest win of his career, Bridgestone Invitational. Did well at Oakmont, 2016 US Open runner-up there. Similarities, tight tree line par 70s, right up his street. And the small greens, that's a key to backing Lowry this week. Small greens, hardly anyone in the world is superior around the greens than Lowry. He's an ace scrambler. Finished second in the scrambling stats at Bethpage last time out. Got magic hands around the greens. I think everything points to Lowry this week. That little bit of weekend wind in the forecast, a little bit of wind in the weekend forecast was the icing on the cake. Finished 12th in the Canadian Open last year. I think you're getting a great bet this week on Big Shane.
How could anyone resist that? What a strong case you made there. So you think Lowry could be a cult hero. Right then, Glenn, what's your main tip?
Unfortunately, I'm going to be very, very boring. I thought Steve might do the work for me. I'm going to go for DJ. I agree partly that it's warm-up, obviously, for the US Open, but I think wherever he tees it up, he does put it all in. Defending champion, I think, will be an added incentive.
Last time, a bit tight for him though, Glenn.
Sorry,
it's not really his thing.
Driving accuracy wasn't a key stat last time it was played here, and in the meantime, they've cut down 1,000 trees. So I'd imagine there'd be a bit more room off the tee as well. Fair enough if the rough's up a bit, makes it a bit trickier, but. In the other key stats last time, par 4, obviously scoring performance and putting. The key stats, two areas where DJ ranks very highly. Obviously, he's not too much more to say about the guy. He's got it all.
Value, really?
Not really value, I would say. As I said before, I'm not a massive fan of betting golfers at single-figure prices, but outside of the top, seven of the top 20 in the world seeing it out this week. Question marks about a few of them. Steve's highlighted a little bit. I just think he's the more solid of those guys, and I think you have to have someone at the front of the market in your portfolio. DJ for me this week.
Okay, no wonder the planet's knackered. If Canada is bulldozing one golf course and chopping down 1,000 trees in another, what a sad state of affairs. Never mind that.
There's about a million trees to start with. It was a highly densely forest location, this one. So, yeah, still plenty of trees there. It just improves some of the sight lines. I think Dustin will go well. He's a hard one to leave out this week because he's got Canadian family, of course. Wayne Gretzky is his father-in-law-to-be. He's very always highly motivated for this event and perhaps looking for some revenge on Brooks Koepka. I mean, I wonder what Glenn makes of the coach switch, though. I mean, DJ sacked his coach a couple of weeks ago. Only revealed of late, Claude Harmon III, you know, the Sky commentator, Bruce?
Yeah.
He was coaching Koepka and Johnson, but Johnson's had enough of that, which I think is probably down to the way that Harmon celebrated manically by the 72nd hole when Koepka won the USPGA. Did you see that?
No.
Harmon was, Johnson and Koepka obviously just had a duel for the title. Harmon should be independent there, really. He coaches both players. He shouldn't have really been that excited about who won. You know, he's done his job. They're both there, first and second. But he was waiting for Koepka on the 72nd green, glorying in it, you know, almost hand in hand as they left that green, going, giving it the old woo-hoo. So I think that pissed DJ off massively, and he just thought, right, he's gone back to his high school coach now, and he's going to use Butch sort of on a part-time basis. So fascinating times on the coach on the DJ coach front.
Does that deter you at all, Glenn, that coach news?
No, not at all, really. It possibly in the offing already. You know? I mean, every time I've heard Claude Harmon talk about Kevin, he does always sound like he's having a love affair with the guy. But so he'd hardly push DJ to the back sort of thing. But I don't know, perhaps something wasn't quite working. That's the icing on the cake. I'm sure it won't affect his game. So Butch still in his corner. He'll be fine, I'm sure.
Now, talking of Butch in people's corners, is Butch still in the Sky corner, Steve? Because I don't think he was on PGA duty, was he?
No, I haven't seen him for a while. But no. US Open next week, surely, he'll be back for that.
If he's not back for that, then that is a big blow to my life, because I love Butch. He's the best sports commentator going at the moment. So hopefully he's still doing it for Sky. Right then, Steve, as well as Shane Lowry, who else are you going to go for?
Next best is Webb Simpson. I think Hamilton Country Club should be right up the street of Simpson. It's a test of tee to green accuracy. Being a short hitter is not a significant disadvantage this week. It normally is for Simpson. Simpson's maiden US Tour title came on a short tight par 70, Sedgefield Country Club, home of the Wyndham Championship. There's similarities between Sedgefield and Hamilton. His 2012 US Open triumph was on another short tight par 70, Olympic Club. And Simpson's taken his game to a new level in the last couple of years. He deserves to be going off the prices that he is. He's been churning out rock-solid results in the majors. His last nine majors, his form figures are 35, 37, 33, 20, 10, 12, 19, 5, 29. I mean, that is magnificent when you consider that the modern major venues are all set up for powerhouses. His fifth spot at Augusta in April was absolutely phenomenal. Hamilton, a much better fit for Simpson. So, yeah, I find it very hard to see Simpson off the pace this week. So, yeah, he's my next best.
Okay, and who else?
And then I've got three Europeans in the staking plan this week. I've got Henrik Stenson and Danny Willett. I think they'll take a shine to the Harry Colt design. Stenson always prefers to hit his three-wood. He's got his trusty three-wood off the tee, and it's been becoming an increasing problem at modern venues. He's been getting outgunned on longer tracks, but it won't be a problem at Hamilton. It sets up perfectly for him. The scene of his last US Tour victory was Sedgefield Country Club, which we've mentioned, the 2017 Wyndham Championship. There's a similar feel between Hamilton and Sedgefield. Stenson tops the strokes gained on approach stats, so he's hitting his irons fantastically, and I think he'll be coming in from closer range this week. I think he can do plenty of damage. And Danny Willett, he's getting his act together again. He won the DP World Tour Championship at the end of last year. His work with Foles, as he likes to call him, Sean Foley, his new coach, clearly is getting results now. He had a little quiet spell after that win in Dubai, but he moved from England to Orlando. He moved a young family from England to Orlando. He's had a settling in process, which I think is now done. That was obviously going to be a disruptive time, but he finished 41st at Bethpage Black, a very impressive, solid course debut. And then last week, 27th at Memorial, another course debut. I think Willett is coming back to form. He's obviously world class, 2016 Masters champion, twice finished in the top five at Wentworth, so likes Colt designs. And I've got one more pick, and that is Aaron Wise. Aaron Wise, US Tour Rookie of the Year in 2018. He's one of my favourite players, actually. Everyone knows how much I love Aaron Wise. His iron play and his putting has been below his usual standard this year, but I don't think it'd be long before he's purring again. He's only 22. And he started his professional career on the Canadian Tour in 2016. 2016, he played seven events on the Canadian Tour, finished in the top 15 in all of them. And he won on his second start in Canada. So he's got fond memories of Canada and a class act going back there as a Web.com Tour winner now and a US Tour winner. He won on the US Tour last year. So, yeah, I think Aaron Wise has to be in the staking plan as well.
22, is that all he is? Blimey, you were 22 when you joined the Racing Post, weren't you, Steve?
I was just turned 21, actually. About a day after my 21st birthday.
God. What advice would you give to the 22-year-old Steve Palmer now, knowing what you know?
Stay calmer. Stay calmer, try and be less headstrong, and go effing take the opportunity it's there for you and wring every little bit out of it.
That's it, good advice. Glenn, apart from DJ, who are you putting up?
I've got a few, a couple of speculative each way selections. One of them, first one, Peter Malnati. I bet you didn't expect to hear his name.
I didn't expect Peter Malnati, no, I didn't.
Well, we talked about following golfers there through thick and thin on that, but it's not the case with this guy. I did actually back him when he won the 2016 Sanderson Farms Championship. Very, very big prices. So always sort of kept an eye on him since. His form's always been very in and out, on and off the web.com tour for a few years until that win in the Sanderson Farms. I remember, I was very taken with his performance as well that week. A rain effective. Effective competition. He played best part of two rounds on the Monday. Very, very solid ball striking, accurate, good putting. I mean, on the week, he was fourth in greens in regulation, second in putting average, and eighth in putts per hour. So almost like a complete game for a maiden tour victory. Like a lot of first-time winners, he went on the missing list for 2 years, barely making cuts. But in recent times, his form seems to be coming back together. About a year ago, I remember seeing an interview of him saying that he said his ball striking was there, but he just not all facets of his game were coming together. But recent weeks have shown that it's definitely getting there. Even last week, first in greens in regulation, in a field like that, I think that's quite an impressive stat. And one that if he can carry it out to this week, will stand him in good stead. He's prominent in all the key stats, I think, needed to play well this week. 13th in total putting. Small, slopey greens, again, will come in very handy. It's a bit of a shot in the dark, but...
150-1, you can't do any damage there, can you?
Exactly. If he continues his upward trend, and if it can all come together this week, so fingers crossed that Peter Malnati will have a big week.
OK, anyone else?
Yeah, I'm going to go for the guy who won Hamilton in 2012, Scott Piercy. Another guy, again, he's having a very solid year. Good ball striker. Moaned last time when he won here, amazingly, that he wasn't able to use his driver that often. He resorted to the free wood or the irons off the tee. Done very well, obviously, in winning. He's having a great season, 7 top 20s, recent form figures of 3rd, 13th. 2nd, 41st and 19th. The second place was at the Byron Nelson. 4 rounds without a bogey. First player in about 3 years, I think, to do that. So, you know, testament to where his game is at the moment. Again, figures highly in the stats that I've mentioned earlier. In putting in a good performance this week. And I think he could go close to repeating his victory in 2012.
Marvellous. Steve, did Peter Malnati occupy much of your time as you were studying up for this event?
No, I must admit he didn't. No, I wish Glenn well with that one. He's always been a very good putter, and that is astonishing that he topped the ball striking stats last week, because that's always been his weakness. He's renowned as a good putter who can't really play from tee to green. So, yeah, interesting stat.
Definitely going to have to have a little bit on that. And are we all done on Canada now, Steve?
I think we are. I think we've got to get on to the big event of the week, haven't we?
Right, I'm going to try and drum some enthusiasm up for this. All the eyes of the sporting world are on Portugal this week, with the Nations League finals taking semi-finals and final taking place. But that's not all, because over in somewhere called Cascais, there's the Golf Sixes. It takes place on Friday and Saturday. I'm not even going to begin to try and explain the format to you, because I got confused after about 3 lines. So, Steve, over to you. Without bewildering people too much, what is it? When is it? How does it work? And how do we kind of determine the winner?
Okay. Yeah, this is the third Golf Sixes event, but it's the first one outside of England. We've moved to Oteivos Dunes in Portugal, widely regarded as the best course in Portugal. It's hosted their National Open 4 times. 2009 was the last one, though, so a long time ago. 16 teams of 2 split into 4 groups of 4. 6 hole round-robin matches on Friday before the top 2 teams from each group progress to the knockout stages on the Saturday. So you have quarterfinals, semifinals, third place playoff and final on the Saturday. All the matches are greensomes match play. So both players tee off, the team select their best drive, and then they play alternate shot from there. And the 6-hole course has got 4 par 4s and 2 par 3s. It's right by the Atlantic Ocean. The wind's going to be whipping across it all week. Any further questions?
plenty, but when I started looking at it, I looked at the always interesting tournament lowdown panel in the Racing Post, and it said length, 1,971 yards. I thought, that's my type of course, but then I saw it was a par 22. So, okay, it's beginning to make sense, and it takes place on Friday and Saturday only, doesn't it? Yeah. Right then, Glenn, what's the latest betting on this?
Latest betting, 11-2, Spain. 6-1 England, 8-1 Australia and Ireland, 10-1 South Africa and Sweden, 12 Italy, 14 Denmark, and 16 Bar.
Oh, we haven't had your tournament ratings yet. What are you rating? Because you always put a rating of 10 for a tournament. What's the Canadian Open this week?
No, we were at 9 last week. We'll be more. This comes out as a 7 this week. So
Canada 7. This could be minus, couldn't it? This nonsense.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, it's hard to grade these, obviously, with pairs and all that. So I don't actually put a rating on this one. It's actually classed as an unofficial event, even though it's on their site. I read somewhere this week. It's almost like a bit of fun for £1 million of prize money, I think. You know, no, not £1 million. Where did I get that from?
Would you? Yeah, there is a million. Yeah, you get 100 grand if you win it, but total purse is a million. Would you expect much in the way of turnover, do you think, Glenn?
No.
No, in a word.
Obviously, near to nothing so far. So.
No. Okay, well, look, I mean, if you back the winner, you still get paid out at exactly the same price as if it was the Open. So let's raise ourselves. Steve, who's your main tip?
Main tip is Ireland. Paul Dunne and Gavin Moynihan, the defending champions. They're both really good eggs. Get on like a house on fire. Both Dublin-born. Moynihan last year came into this tournament. He'd missed 10 consecutive cuts prior to the event. So he really gave Ireland very little chance of success. But he loved teaming up with Dunne and played well. Moynihan seems to like these quirky formats. His best challenge tour result was runner-up in a nine-hole match play event in Spain. And he's in much better form this year coming into the Gulf Sixes. He was 12th in the Oman Open in March. He was 16th in the Made in Denmark last month. He qualified for the knockout stages of the Belgian knockout last week. So Moynihan looks to me like he's settling on the pro circuit. He's only 24. He's clearly improving. And as I say, much better form than he had coming into this event last year. And Dunne, who is the senior member of the side, 2 years older, 2017 British Masters champion. He's found some form too. He closed with a 67 for fourth place in the Made in Denmark last time out. And his last go at six-hole competition was in the Perth Super 6 in February, and he finished third in that event. So he's not scared of short-haul golf. Otavos Dunes, fantastic fit for the Irish. Two players who've both excelled on links terrain. The wind in the forecast is nothing to fear for them. And I like the way that neither Moynihan nor Dunne played at Walton Heath on Monday in that 36-hole US Open qualifier. I mean, that was a tiring start to the week for those that did. 14 of the 32 players in attendance at Otavos Dunes played at Walton Heath on Monday. But the Irish, fresh as daisies and ready to defend their title.
Oh, did Lee Westwood get through, by the way?
No. West, the Worksop Wonder is missing the US Open again.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
I was going to go to that. You alerted me to it, and I was playing golf with Paul Keighley about 4 miles away from there. But when we finished up, we dispersed because it's a great day out there. It's the best free day in sport, that.
Yeah, you could have enjoyed Dean Burmester's performance. He went bananas. Dean Burmester, a runaway winner of that 36-hole qualifier, he would have entertained you royally. But I'm sure you had lots of fun.
Yes, indeed. Okay, Glenn, who's your main tip?
Again, really boring. I'm going with a favourite, Spain. I didn't spend too much time over this, I would admit. But when I'm assessing it at the start, I saw Jorge Campeão, Nacho Elvira together, and just straight away I thought they've got to be big runners. Sorry?
You've heard of them, so they must be good.
I mean, Campeão was obviously earlier in the season. He missed his last two cuts, but earlier season he had a run of six tournaments with five top three finishes, including his maiden win in the Trophy Hassan in Morocco. He'd just been on an amazing run of form, so before his last two. Again, the quirky nature of the event may well see him find his form again, playing with his compatriot. And Elvira had a similar run of form, second, and sixth, a few starts back. Finished 12th in the Belgian knockout of the weekend. He was, unfortunately, one of the guys competing at Walton Heath on Monday, but he did qualify. So we'll give him a lift. I just think the two guys together will put in a good show and hopefully justify favouritism.
Okay. And Steve, I think you've got the hots for Spain as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I agree with Glenn. I think Spain should be clear favourites. That's a formidable pairing of Campillo's form figures that Glenn was mentioning, 2-2, 23-1-3 before the USPGA. Wouldn't worry about missing the cut at the USPGA. That's a tough ask at Bethpage. And then he missed the cut in Denmark, but I think he was absolutely knackered. He's had 14 days off since then to prepare for this one. He didn't bother with Walton Heath. So I think Campillo obviously will get back in the groove that he had prior to the USPGA. Elvira, he had a long day at Walton Heath. He didn't qualify. He finished second alternate. So he'll be hoping players get injured in the US Open field and then he can sneak in. But you know, he's clearly playing well. He was 7-under at 7-under at Walton Heath. He was 10-under par in the Belgian knockout for the 63 holes he played there. He's finished second twice this year. So yes, Spain are the absolute form horses. And I see this tournament as a two-pronged attack. If you back Ireland and Spain, I think you've got a good chance of success. It's a shame that the draw means that they would meet in the semi-finals if they won all of their matches. But you know, a lot of tournaments like this that you look at, you get carried away with a draw if you look that far ahead. I mean, the ideal scenario would be for one of them to finish runner-up in their group and then they can meet in the final. But yeah, we'll see how it pans out. But if you have win-only bets on Ireland and Spain, I think you've got an excellent chance of success.
And Steve, among the 16 teams, there's two women's teams, weren't there? Germany and England. Do they play off the women's tees or do they have to play off the backs?
Yeah, they play off the women's tees. So, yeah, I mean, they've got a fair chance of success. But
who's the best of that? Like Esther Henselite's good this year, isn't she, I think?
I always bow to Jeremy Chapman on this. He follows the women's golf closer than he does the men's golf. He's obsessed with ladies' golf. So I would have to ask him. I can't see. I think last year England got to the quarterfinals, didn't they? And then were beaten then. So yeah, I'm sorry. I'd love to tip a ladies team and have a more exciting prices for you. But when they come up against the likes of your Jorge Campilos and your Natural Veras, I think it'd be too much for them. With all due respect,
Glenn, are you going to augment anyone with Spain or just go with a one-pronged attack? Yes.
One-pronged attack for me. Guys, I wonder, can any of you pronounce the other German player?
Laura, oh God, I haven't got my glasses. Fuenfestuck. Is that it?
I've got no idea. Just
Steve, do you want to have a go at that one?
I'm not sure. Let's go back to our rankings chat.
I think we can bracket the one in commentator beware for sure, can't we?
Yeah. Star Sports got a name the finalist market. If you would jazz up and get a bit more business, Glenn, maybe a name the finalist market, because I don't see anyone doing that yet. Yeah. But we're not teeing off until Friday, so we've got plenty of time to work it out. I think that would be exciting.
That'd keep you busy for the afternoon. I might have a go at that. Yeah, cheers, mate. Yeah, I should do that.
Yeah, you enjoy that, wouldn't you, Glenn? 3 hours, weren't you? Take 7 bets on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Great use of your time. Okay, the concise roundup of the tips this week. Canadian Open, Steve Palmer.
Canadian Open, Shane Lowry, Webb Simpson, Henrik Stenson, Danny Willett, and Aaron Wise.
And Glenn Day?
Dustin Johnson, Peter Malnati, and Scott Piercy.
And the Golf Sixes, Steve Palmer.
Ireland, Spain.
And Glenn Day?
Spain.
And I just want to make clear there that when I say Glenn Day, I'm referring to Glenn Day, who's the Star Sports expert. I'm not tipping Glenn Day. I think he's retired. Is he inactive now, Glenn Day, or does he still get a game every so often?
He plays on the Champions. He led the major they had a couple of weeks ago, the Stricker one.
Did he?
Yeah, he was leading after the first round. He actually got a mention in commentary in the Belgian knockout last week, funny enough.
Oh, wow.
Mark James and Richard Boxer were talking and someone pulled out a 3-wood to chip round the side of the green. And I think it was Boxer referenced someone who's 30 years ago and it came up Glenn Day. And then they come up, like you said last week, oh, didn't he have a nickname? Yeah, Glenn All Day because he's so. Yeah, just funny having you guys mentioned him last week. He cropped up in the commentary.
That's
as well.
Amazing. Did you say the Stricker Open?
No, that's the major that Stricker won.
Sorry. Oh, Stricker. Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you said a stripper. I know they're doing golf sixes and nine holes and everything. I thought strippers as well. That's taking it to a new level.
Steve Stripper, that was my nickname at school, actually, Steve Stripper.
Why, did you used to get your kit off a lot?
No, I'm only playing.
All right, anyway, we've got some proper stuff next week, haven't we? We've got the US Open. Are we at Pebble Beach, aren't we?
Yeah, US Open next week, yeah, Pebble Beach, can't wait for that one. Do we want bets of the week for this one first?
Okay, let's do bets of the week this week. Steve, if you only had one bet, what would it be?
If I only had one bet, and there's a lovely symmetry to it this week, you know I like an each way double.
Yeah.
I'm very much an Irishman this week. Obviously, Shane Lowry is my fancy in Canada, and I think Ireland will win the Golf Sixes. So, I'm going to be spending the weekend quaffing Guinness and supporting those two. Yeah, the each way double, Lowry and Ireland.
And Glenn, would you go the each way double, Spain and DJ as your one bet?
No, I'm just going to go with... I don't like them quirky tournaments. I'm not too keen on that. Just DJ for the win, Bob.
No messing about. Okay. And if you had to pick one... No, I'm not going to do this, but are you looking next week for the US Open at short price players or big price players, Steve?
I don't know. I haven't assessed it yet. I mean...
When do you start your studying?
I start my studying this weekend. Yeah, I'll do the 156 player player guide, and that'll be the start of the study year. No, take each week as it comes. We need to win our US Open, war chest first, don't we?
Yeah, is that what you do as well, Glenn? Do you have a little peek ahead, or do you sort of get going once the previous week's tournaments are done?
I very rarely bet anti-personal events. See what's happening over the course of the weekend and that, and then you start to formulate, what you're looking for and that. And most of it's Sunday and Monday, really.
And what are you expecting to be the most exciting thing to happen between now and when we reconvene next Wednesday, Steve?
Well, I expect to be doing the River Dance on Sunday night. My Michael Flatley impression after Lowry and Ireland both win. Yeah, that'll be it. I'll be singing all my Irish songs on Sunday night.
Glenn,
Danny Boy and all.
Any fun stuff you're going to get the clubs out at all, Glenn, between next week?
No, actually, my mate emailed me. I think I'm probably going to have a goal-free year this year. I just can't get motivated at the moment. I piled on a few pounds. I need to lose some weight as well. So.
A goal-free year?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Ooh,
I'm hoping a year without them re-motivate me, rekindle the fire and come out and knock a few shots off my handicap next year.
Oh, no, don't do that, Glenn. You must be able to nick a quick round. Come on, mate.
We got,
it's good for you, isn't it? Golf is good for you. That help you lose weight, wouldn't it? How are you going to lose the pounds?
I've got to get out of there. I can't walk to the course.
Oh, you can't walk to the course? Oh, right. Blimey.
I don't drive either as well. I'm always limited in that respect. So, I think I'll just leave it. We normally have a firm's due in September. I might turn up for that, but obviously I'll be very rusty. Just not motivating me at the moment. Actually playing. But, I'm quite happy watching it at the moment.
Fair enough. Okay, right then. Thank you very much indeed, chaps. We've got our final football podcast of the season tomorrow, where we're looking back on the season just gone and also turning our attention to the Women's World Cup. On Friday, Maddie presents the Racing Podcast. And if you can't join us for them, like I say, we're back here next Wednesday for a US Open special.
Give them the horn!